Ananda Shidway Digadat Ha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Shri Shri Radhakrishna Govagavada Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kija Vrindavanam Kija Suradam Kija Javadiptam Kija Jagadavasami Kija Yamunamai Kija Shrimati Lassi Devi Kija Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kija Gaur Premananda. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. Hari Hari Go. Okay. So Om Ganatam Ananda Shah. Yananjana Shilakaya Chaksur Meditam Yenatas Mai Shri Gurave Namaha. So when I heard it was the Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha this Sunday, I was thinking about what sort of people we should invite to the program. And one of the other devotees said, well, we should invite a whole bunch of Western people that are coming to our Western preaching programs. And I was thinking, it's a very unusual story for Western people to be exposed to. Like if you actually think about a Western person coming in who doesn't have the background, of how they'll come in and see a tree marrying a stone, it might cause them to have a traumatic reaction. So therefore, it's important to understand a little background about God, because we worship Krishna, of course, in this month of Kartik. We worship Krishna in a very intimate way. At the same time, he is God. I hate to inform you. And that means basically a lot of things, that we have responsibilities towards God. But also it means that he can do anything, anytime, any place, anywhere, and he can set all the rules and no one can arrest him for doing it. Like for us, you know, if we do something wrong, there's karma can arrest us, the police can arrest us if we're speeding. But Krishna never gets arrested by anybody. So therefore, he does amazing things. I mean, he can have animals speak. He can have animals remember their past birth, such as in the case of Bart Maharaj, who became a deer. Amazing, amazing things. And I'll just tell one story that illustrates this, where one person didn't have faith that God could do amazing things, and another person did have faith. And so this is the famous story, of course. Narada Muni comes along and does his normal thing, Radhika Ramana Namine. And he happens to come across a cobbler and a Brahmin. And the Brahmana says to him, oh, my dear Narada Muni. First of all, he asks for blessings. Actually, that's generally the case. When people see a great saintly person, they ask for blessings. Please give me more money. Make my wife pleasing to me, Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari. So, just like today, we were talking, today is also the disappearance day of Guru Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And in order to avoid people coming up to him to ask him for blessings, he would hide under a boat to chant Hare Krishna. Because everyone would come up to him and bother him, you know, please bless me to be wealthy, please bless me to be rich. Just like I was just at Govardhan. And we get people coming in from Delhi who want to accompany me to be blessed to make money. There's one gentleman, a very interesting gentleman. He comes each time I go to Govardhan to do a parikrama. And he says, please bless me, first of all, that I can get a PR. That means, for those of you who don't know what that means like a green card for Australia or New Zealand. And so he's been going around. Finally, he gets his green card for Australia, of New Zealand, sorry. And he says, wow, Govardhan is so great. And he says, then he keeps enthusiastically all night long doing parikrama over and over and over again. You know, wow, I got my green card. I got my residency permit. Wow, wow. And he just goes all night long, things I can't even do. He becomes more austere than me just to get more blessings. And I said, wow, I was thinking, if I had so much devotion, you know, I'd be up there in the spiritual world by now. So, So eventually, it's interesting, by doing all this, he comes to me one day and says, isn't there something more than money in this world? And it's like it's just like that story of the touchstone, you know. And Sanatana Goswami, and I said, yes. And he says, what is it? I says, pure devotional service. He said, I'd really like to get initiated one day, but you know, I'm not really ready. I have too many desires. I said, just keep doing parikrama. One day all those desires will go away. So anyway, so going back to the story of Narada Muni and the Brahmin. So the Brahmin said, basically after asking Narada Muni for all these blessings, you know, he says, well, where are you going? And Narada Muni says, well, I can go anywhere, but I'm going to Vaikuntha next. And the Brahmin says, well, if you're going to Vaikuntha, when you come back, tell me what... also ask Narayan when I'm going back to home, back to Godhead, getting liberated. He's not so much interested in going to the spiritual world. Mainly he's interested in liberation, you know, getting out of the material world. And his concept of liberation is merging into the Brahmajyoti. So anyway, so he goes and asks him that question, and then Narada Muni goes to visit a cobbler. The cobbler happens to be a great devotee with great faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the cobbler also asks him the same questions. The cobbler doesn't ask for any benedictions, which is quite interesting, because he's a pure devotee. Even though he's just a cobbler, that means someone who makes shoes. Can you imagine that? I mean, if I was a cobbler, I'd be asking for a lot. You know, please give me more shoes. But anyway, so... give me more clients for my shoes, at least. So... the cobbler asks the same question, you know, when am I going back to Godhead? But he actually wants to go back to the spiritual world. And so Narada Muni goes to Vaikuntha, and he asks Narayan the questions. And Narayan says, well, you can tell the Brahmin that he's going to go back to Godhead after many, 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 many births. And you can tell the cobbler he's going back to Godhead immediately after this birth. And Narada Muni says, you know, what? How is this possible? You know, Brahmins are supposed to be so elevated and cobblers, they're moochies. They can't go back to God. And, you know, moochie means someone who's dirty. So Lord Narayan says, well, just tell them the story when they ask what I was doing and you'll understand their mentality. Tell them the story that Lord Narayan was taking an elephant and passing it through the eye of a needle, back and forth, back and forth. So Narada Muni, not understanding, what is Lord Narayan talking about here? Because even pure devotees sometimes don't understand why or what Lord Narayan is doing, what his intentions are. But at least they trust the intentions. So he goes to the Brahmin asks, when am I going back to Godhead? When am I getting liberated? And Narada Muni says, many, 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 many billions of births. And the Brahmin says, I don't believe you actually saw Narayan. What was he doing? And Narada Muni said he was passing an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the Brahmin said, you know, get out of here with your crazy stories. You know, so because here we're talking about stories that people can't believe in. You know, Lord Narayan passing an elephant through the eye of the needle. So then he goes to the cobbler. The cobbler says, where am I going? When am I going back to Godhead? And the Lord, and Narada Muni says, you're going back right after this lifetime. And the cobbler says, yeah, what was Lord Narayan doing? And Narada Muni says the same thing, passing an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the cobbler says, wow, that's great. Narayan can do anything. You know, he just basically is not so amazed by it. He just says, well, Hare Krishna. All glories to Prabhupada. So, because he was a member of ISKCON. And the cobbler was just a ritualistic brahmana. He was anyway, I won't tell you what his last name was. So then Narada Muni says, what? You believe that actually Lord Narayan was passing an elephant through the eye of a needle because an elephant is so big, needle is so small? And the cobbler said, that's easy to understand. What's the problem, Narada? You know, he didn't use that accent. It was a New York accent. But he said, what's the problem? And he said, Narada Muni said, how can you understand that? And the cobbler said, well, just look at a tree and the seed of a tree. In the seed of a tree, there's many, many little tiny particles. And in each and every seed, there's a whole tree, the potential tree. and the tree grows from there. So what's the problem? If he can do that, he can do anything. So that is our faith. I mean, that's why I wanted to proceed the story with that particular story, the story of Tulsi Shell and Ravi Vahal, because it's quite an amazing story. But it's nothing for Krishna. Sometimes people think, Krishna had 16,108 wives. I can't even take care of one wife. You'll discover that. So he's married to a very nice girl. She's actually a great devotee. I was with her in India. She was on Parikrama with us. Anyway, so he'll think, in Kali Yuga, actually, it's described that one is a hero if they can maintain one wife. You know, keep up with the saris and the shoes and the jewelry and everything like that. So, and then you think, Krishna, 16,108. I mean, how did he manage such a thing? And then Prabhupada would say, it was only 16,108. Because Krishna's God, he can do anything. I mean, Krishna could have like 16 quadrillion to the 10th, you know, 100th power or something, 10 to the 100th power wives, and it'd still be easy for him. Because he's maintaining everything. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yobadadati kama. Krishna's maintaining all of us. So in one sense, we're all prakriti in relationship to Krishna's purusha. So what's the problem? He's God. I mean, unless you understand the omniscience, the omnipotence of God, then you'll never really understand what God is. I was actually speaking, just another thing before I get to the story, if I ever get to the story. I was speaking to someone today about this particular branch of philosophy called theodicy, which means basically the justice of God. In other words, why bad things happen to good people, good things happen to bad people. For example, you have a little child who's born blind or with some defect like that, and he hasn't done anything bad. So why does that happen? So in other religions, they explain, well, they don't explain. It's an unexplained mystery. Or they may say, in an attempt to explain it, that God means well, but he just... Maybe it's Krishna calling. Telling me to get on with the show. But anyway... So they may say that God means well, but he just lost control of things. I mean, just like, for example, you know, I started this temple, 1982? I can't control everything anymore. There's so many people and so many things happening, and there's renovation going on downstairs and all these things, and I just say, oh, it's out of my control. You know, somehow or other it's happening by Krishna's mercy. Like Prabhupada said, this movement is going on only by Krishna's mercy. When Prabhupada saw all the devotees sleeping when he was giving class, Prabhupada commented, this movement is only going on by Krishna's mercy. So this temple also is only going on by Krishna. Sorry about that. By Krishna's mercy. So anyway, but Krishna's not like me, that he starts something and then he loses control. It just gets too big and then he has to establish corporate mechanisms and strategy and think tanks. And finally, he retires. You know, because Krishna's a lot more than 65 years old. So he's entitled to Social Security and a pension. So Krishna never... First of all, he doesn't even have to work. It's all done by his expansions and by his energies. So it's not that Krishna loses control. So if you actually understand God is omniscient, omnipotent, and all these omni words... and all good, too, then the only way you can explain why bad things happen to apparently good people and good things happen to apparently bad people is the principle of reincarnation and karma. And so it makes sense. In other words, the Vedas have the only explanation, possible explanation, for why things happen to people in this world who are apparently either good or bad. Anyway, so getting on with the story... So this is an amazing story. And actually, before we tell the story, also you want to glorify Tulsi Devi a little bit. Because Krishna does not accept any offerings that are not made, that are made without a tulsi leaf on them. You can offer so much opulent food, but unless there's a tulsi leaf or part of the tulsi plant, you can get dried tulsi leaves like that, then Krishna will not accept. And there's this story at Govardhan, which I just came from. They were doing the anakut, that means the grain ceremony to offer to Govardhan, and they were offering more and more and more and more. This was 5,000 years ago. And Govardhan ate everything. He assumed a gigantic form and consumed everything. And then he kept asking, Anyor, Anyor, I want more, I want more. And they said, there isn't any more. And they were afraid that he was going to get angry with them. And so eventually they offered one tulsi leaf, and then Govardhan was satisfied. So this story of Tulsi Devi is a leela. I wanted to proceed the story with that. In other words, it's not just after this story happened that Tulsi Devi was offered to Krishna. Just like 5,000 years ago, Krishna got some of his weapons from Agni Dev. You know the story, the Kandava Prash story? Where Agni Dev ate the Kandava forest because he was sick. Someone fed him too much ghee. For 12 years he was drinking ghee. You know that story? And so after he drank or the ghee, he got sick. He had a stomach ache. Even Agni can get a stomach ache. And so then he had to consume the Kandava forest, and Arjuna and Krishna allowed him to do that. And then he awarded Krishna with the Sudarshan Chakra and the club. So you can say, well, Krishna didn't have his chakra before that? Or he didn't have his club? He was dependent on Agni? No, it's a pastime. These things happen again and again and again because pastime means lila. It's a playful, playful story. Krishna enjoys things. Krishna enjoys all these different rasas. He enjoys the anger of Radharani, the man of Radharani. He enjoys sometimes ghastliness, these indirect rasas that we're talking about. And so that's God. He's the supreme enjoyer. Anything that you see that in this world is enjoyable, but not sinful, of course, not eating meat, those particular rasas or tastes are enjoyed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's why he has all these different leelas, to have fun. If you analyze God's psychology, it's not that he acts in a certain way because his mother treated him in a certain way when he was a kid. Like our psychology, like if you say, I mean, just analyze me. Why don't you like to take borscht, which is beet soup? Because my mother forced me to take it when I was young. So my psychology is based upon, you know, the past impressions on the subtle body. But Krishna's psychology is simply based upon having fun. So if you ask, why does Krishna do anything? He's having a good time. That's it. Bas, no more. No more explanation, no need for a psychologist, no analysis, no MMPI, you know. Krishna has to take a psychological test. Anyway, so here's a story of Krishna's fun. And sometimes it doesn't appear like fun for some people. But it is fun. They are having fun. Just like when little kids, they play cops and robbers and do things like that, they're having fun. So Krishna's devotees, they play different parts. So this story involves two different personalities. One is called Tulsi Devi, and the other one is called Sudam. And so we're going to tell a little bit of the story that happened in the spiritual world. So Tulsi Devi, first of all, is a partial expansion of Srimati Radharani. And sometimes, in order to make Radharani angry, Krishna associates with some other gopi. Actually, Krishna is only interested in Radha. However, he's interested in making her angry because he enjoys her getting angry. And that enables him to do so many things, like put on a guise of a woman so he can meet with her again. It would be tricky in different ways. So Krishna, one time associated with Tulsi Devi, who was an expansion of Radharani, and Srimati Radharani got very angry, and she cursed Tulsi Devi. And she cursed Tulsi Devi and to take birth in this earth planet. And Krishna said, you will take birth in India. Generally, Krishna's devotees take birth in India, sometimes in the West. You'll take birth in India. Whoops. Sorry, that's all right. And later on, marry Narayan. At the same time, there was another devotee who was actually cursed to take birth on the earth planet. Tulsi associated one... I know, sorry about this. Krishna associated with another gopi. Her name was Viraja. And this Viraja, of course, later on became a river on the earth, or the Viraja, not on the earth, but a river between the material world and the spiritual world. And Radha cursed her to become a river. And Radha then started yelling at Krishna, rebuking him. And in order to defend Krishna, Sudam, the coward boy, rebuked Srimati Radharani. And so she got so angry at Sudam, she said, I curse you to be born in the womb of a demon, a Danavi, on the earth planet. So that's the story that goes before the story we're going to tell. So here's the story. So anyway, so they were both cursed to take birth on the earth planet, or take birth as a child of a Danavi. So once upon a time, there were two great devotees. Their names were Dharmadvaja and Madhavi. And they had a daughter who was a partial expansion of Lakshmi. That was Tulsi Devi, actually. And she was in her mother's womb for 100 celestial years. And she was extremely beautiful. And it's described some of the bodily features. She had a lotus flower on her foot. Her eyes were like lotuses. Her lips were like bimba. That means reddish. Her soles of the feet were red, her navel was deep, and three folds in the stomach, and a halo, and a white complexion like a champaka flower. Mm. So she went to Badrinath to do austerities to get Krishna as her husband. And she did these austerities for 100,000 celestial years. And that's what you have to do to get a good husband. You ladies are not married. Of course, right... After this month, we come across Katyayani Vrat. So that's another method of getting a good husband, if you want Krishna as your husband. We'll tell that story perhaps in a future week. So anyway, so for 20,000 years, she just ate fruits and water. 30,000 years, dry leaves. 40,000 years, just breathe. And 10,000 years, nothing. And she stood on one leg. And then Lord Brahma came. And Lord Brahma explained that you are a gopi who is a partial expansion of Radha, and you were cursed to come down on the earth planet. Mm. And Brahma replied, or told her, that you will marry Shankachuda, who is Sudam, and you were attracted to him in Gokula, or Goloka, and so therefore you're going to get married to him. And both of you are Jati Smarana. That means you both remember your past birth. Of course, in this story, they actually forget their past birth when they fall in love with each other. So he performed austerities. This Shankachuda, who was previously Sudam, performed austerities to get you as his wife. Later on, and the whole story was told by Lord Brahma, what would happen. But you see, they were so much into the Leela that they forgot what was going to happen. She said, later on, you will be cursed to be a Tulsi plant, and Narayan will break your chastity. And Tulsi asked Lord Brahma then that I want to become free of fear of Srimati Radharani, and Brahma initiated her into the 16-letter Radha mantra. And he said, don't worry, in this way Radharani will approve of everything. So Tulsi began to worship Radharani for 12 years more, and then Kamadeva is Cupid. He not only appears in February, but he appears all year round. So you got to be careful. He's also Ananga. That means you can't see him when he's coming. Because he was burnt to ashes by Lord Shiva. And so he's invisible. And he just fires his arrows, his form, taste, smell, touch. And then your brain scan looks like you've been taking cocaine. So that's true. I mean, it's been analyzed like that. So this is a sannyasi class. So Kamadeva affected her, and she used to see Shankachuda in her dreams. In the meantime, Shankachuda was in the Pushkara forest executing austerities, chanting the Krishna mantra, and the effulgence came from his head because it became so great. And all the demigods were worried. They went to Vaikuntha, and they were assured by Vishnu that Vishnu would actually take care of it. So that Shankachuda eventually, by performing austerities, Lord Brahma appeared, and he was told to marry Tulsi Devi, and they married. And Lord Brahma also benedicted him with an amulet of Sri Krishna, which is called Sarva Mangala Maya, and instructed him to marry Tulsi. So first of all, he approaches Tulsi. Tulsi wants to marry him. By this time, she's madly in love. He's madly in love. And so, but she tests him first. When he says, "Will you marry me?" Tulsi says, "Do you know the nature of a lady?" And she explains some negative natures at that particular point. And he says, "Well, that's only someone who's in passion and ignorance." And so that's true. Because if someone's in passion and ignorance, whether they're men or women, they can't be relied on. Someone who is in goodness can be relied on. His goodness means nishto, or stable. So we should always associate with those in the mode of goodness, not in the mode of passion or ignorance. We should be compassionate to those in the mode of passion and ignorance. So Shankachuda basically explains, "Lord Brahma sent me, so let's get married." And they got married through this Gandharva rite. Actually, we're going to have a full marriage ceremony here, but Shankachuda and Tulsi did not get married through this whole Vivaha Yajna. They have this Gandharva rite. Gandharva rite is where you just exchange garlands and you're considered married. There's different types of bona fide marriages. And Gandharva rite saves a lot of money. For those of you who have daughters and planning your daughter's marriage, you know how expensive it's going to be. We have devotees who took out mortgages on their houses to pay for marriages. So I suggest the Gandharva rite, or even better, Rakshasa rite, where the boy kidnaps the girl. That's even cheaper. Because there's no garlands. You don't have to pay for the flowers at that point. Krishna did that. He kidnapped Rukmini. Arjuna did that. He kidnapped Subhadra. So it's perfectly bona fide in disciplic succession. Okay? Don't blame me. If you're caught or killed, I will disavow any knowledge of your actions. Anyway, so they get married, and then they enjoy, for 4,300 years. Actually, 4,300,000 years. And Shankachuda becomes so powerful, he gets control of all the gods. The gods go to Lord Brahma. That's the demigods, not the gods. They go to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma goes to Shiva. And then they go to Lord Narayan, and Lord Narayan explains everything. Very, very interesting. So then, Narayan gives a trident to Lord Shiva, saying, "With this trident, you'll be able to kill Shankachuda." And he explains that disguised as a Brahmin, I will take away this amulet that is protecting him, and I will also violate her chastity. So Lord Shiva gets ready to attack Shankachuda and sends all the demons, He sends his envoy, which are the demigods, to challenge Shankachuda. Shankachuda accepts this. So in this battle, there's Lord Shiva, Kartikeya, the Vasus, the Adityas, Indra, Agni, Vajra, Kali. And Shankachuda informs Tulsi about this imminent battle and tells her don't worry, in the future, we're going to be back with Radha and Krishna. So the worst thing that will happen is I get killed, and then we go back to Godhead. But she's still madly in love with him, and he's madly in love with her. So he prepares for war, and he has 300,000 Akshahini forces. So he asks for the blessings. Before the war, this is actually a very Vedic war, he asks for Lord Shiva's blessings and Bhadrakali's blessings. And Lord Shiva explains to him that you are actually a Vaishnava, and soon you will return to the spiritual world. And then he says to Lord Shiva, don't favor the demigods. But still, the war begins, the demigods get defeated, and then Kartikeya and Bhadrakali enter the battle. Bhadrakali hurls all these weapons, but he, that is Shankachuta, does not fire any weapons at her. She gets her trident ready to kill him, but she's stopped, and she's reminded of Lord Brahma's boon, that he cannot be killed until his wife's chastity is violated and this amulet is taken away. So she desists from attacking him, but she eats millions of demons, devours them. And the only demons that were left alive crawled out of her mouth while she was chewing them. There were 100,000. Pretty gross, isn't it? Anyway, what can I say? This is the story. 100,000 of them escaped. Anyway. Then Lord Shiva enters the battle. Shankachuta offers obeisances to him. And there's a fight for 1 year. Lord Shiva grabs his trident. And then he's reminded of the benediction that he can't kill until this amulet and chastity of Tulsi is violated. Lord Shiva prays to Lord Vishnu. Vishnu appears and agrees to help, but then he takes the form of a very old brahmana. And then he goes to Shankachuta and he begs that amulet. And the amulet is given to him, so Shankachuta is able to be killed. Only one condition left, that Tulsi's chastity has to be violated. Because a chaste lady can protect her husband. Just like that story, the Markandeya Purana, where that one man was cursed to die before the rising of the sun, and his wife stopped the rising of the sun. Pretty good, isn't it? So if a lady is chaste, she's so powerful. You should never insult. If one insults a chaste lady, just like the Kauravas insulted Draupadi, everything's finished. The whole family's destroyed. The whole village is destroyed. The whole country can be destroyed. So then Lord Vishnu becomes even more tricky. He assumes the form of Shankachuta, goes to Tulsi's place, making believe that the fight is over. He tells Tulsi Devi, actually, dear, the fight's over. Lord Brahma came and made peace, so, you know, we're not going to fight anymore. So then he has a relationship with Tulsi Devi, and because of that, her chastity is broken. Lord Shiva fires his trident, which is called Vijaya. It's 100 suns bright, 14,000 cubits long, 100 cubits wide, and Shankachuta sees it's coming. He sits in a yoga posture, meditates on Krishna's feet, and his bones are tossed in the sea. Those bones become the conch shells. That's why generally bones are considered impure. Like in the Ramayana, when these demons were trying to disturb the sacrifice of Vishwamitra Muni, what did they throw into the sacrifice? Bones. Bones are very impure. But the bones, or that the conch shell is the bones of a conch. And that's considered pure. And you blow on it, and it's a very auspicious sound. But if you're a demon and you blow on it, it's inauspicious. Did you know that? So the bones become the conches, and the water in conches are considered to be like sacred rivers. And they can be offered to all incarnations of Krishna, but not to Lord Shiva. So the conch blown indicates Lakshmi is there, except when low-class people, if someone who eats meat blows a conch, Lakshmi goes away. So many of you are interested in keeping Lakshmi in your house, right? Like I know everyone loves Lakshmi Puja. Right? Diwali and everything like that. So, first of all, if you're eating meat, you blow a conch, or even worship Lakshmi, she goes away. So you have to become at least a vegetarian to be a high-class person. So then, the conch indicates that Hari and Lakshmi are there and all inauspicious things disappear. So Sudama regained his original form and went back to home, back to Godhead with his flute, chariot, and he flew back to Goloka Vrindavan. And Radha and Krishna were happy to have him there. At the same time, Tulsi was not a happy camper. She discovered the deception and she said, "Who are you?" And she said, "I'll curse you." And Lord Vishnu assumed the form of Lord Vishnu. And Tulsi said, "You were like a stone." And Tulsi at that point said, "You were like a stone. You were merciless. You violated my chastity. And by this means, you have killed my husband. You are merciless. Your heart is like a stone. Therefore, I curse you to become a stone." So that's how the Shalagram Shila appeared. Of course, they were Shalagram Shilas before that. Like I said, this is a pastime. And then, back and forth, Lord Vishnu said, "Yes, I'll become a stone, but you'll also become a tree." And this is a quote from Lord Vishnu. "O exalted one, you performed austerities for a long time to get me as your husband, and Shankachuta also performed austerities for a long time to get you as his wife. By that austerity, he fulfilled his wish. It was necessary for me to fulfill your wish. For this reason, I did what I did. Now leave your earthly body and assume a spiritual body and be married to me. Be like Lakshmi. Your body will become the famous river known as the Gandaki River." So not only is she Tulsi Devi the plant, but she's the Gandaki River, a virtuous, pure, and transparent river in this holy land of India. Of course, right now the river is where? Nepal. "Your hairs will be transformed into holy trees, and since the trees will be born of you, they will be known as Tulsi trees. All the residents of the three worlds will perform worship with the leaves and flowers of this tree. Thus you, Tulsi, will reign as the best among the trees and flowers." So that's the Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha story. Now I'm just going to read a few blessings about that Tulsi Devi gives, and then we'll go on with the marriage. It says, "Lord Hari will not be as pleased with the gift of 1,000 jars of honey as with one Tulsi leaf." Of course, that doesn't mean if you have honey, you shouldn't offer it. You take everything for yourself and you just offer a Tulsi leaf to Krishna. That is not the right procedure. But you should offer everything to Krishna. "Offering one leaf as a gift will bring the same reward as offering millions of cows." Wow. "If one offers Tulsi leaves during the month of Kartik, he gets the same results. If at the time of death one drinks the Tulsi leaf water, one will go back to home, back to Godhead." Wow. "Whoever drinks the Tulsi leaf water daily will receive the benefits of a dip in the Ganges. Whoever plucks a Tulsi leaf and keeps it on his person and leaves his body in a holy place goes back to Godhead. Anyone who leaves his body holding a Tulsi leaf in his hands will be saved from all sins. Anyone who wears a necklace composed of Tulsi wood will surely at every step get the reward of a horse sacrifice." I got one here. Ashwa made a sacrifice. Anyway, so there's all these benedictions. And so Tulsi, all the Tulsi plants are that we see are the same person, just expansions of the same person. They're not different persons. And so in every house, a Tulsi plant should be kept. And according to the devotion of that person, Srila Prabhupada said, the Tulsi will grow luxuriantly. So today we're having this wonderful ceremony of Tulsi Shalagram marriage, and we invite you all to participate in it. Thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.